Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Everybody, welcome back to another edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Gluck, and I'm along with my co-worker, Jordan Bianchi. We are writers for The Athletic, and this is the first of our off-season episodes. We're going to be trying to come to you regularly in the off-season and make sure to keep you guys company. I know a lot of the other NASCAR podcasts are going on a hiatus. Not as much to talk about. Understandable, but we feel like we can come up with some content today and through this off season to keep things going. So we'll try to do that. And the topic for today's episode, our first one since last week's episode with Steve O'Donnell, which was really exciting to have him on after the championship race. We're going to do the five best races of the season. Now, Jordan and I each made our picks. We have not discussed our picks with each other, not the races or the order of them or anything like that. And we also picked our worst race of the season, our single worst race, and so we'll talk about that as well. But first of all, let's welcome in Jordan Bianchi. Jordan, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It kind of dawned on me this morning, we don't have a race this weekend, which is feels very weird. I can't believe the season is over.
I know, it really is odd, because I believe we did an episode at least once a week, every single week all season, including all of the Pro Racing, Pro iRacing Invitational Series, or whatever it was called, during that whole hiatus, we kept
up
the episodes.
It feels like forever ago, by the way.
I know, that was like another lifetime ago. And then we also did bonus episodes for our subscribers, the Athletic subscribers, when they had the midweek races. So sometimes we were doing two a week. We did some episodes when there was, you know, breaking news, things like that. So it's been a busy podcasting season, and it's weird to just have this week go by and it's like, wow, the season's over. A week ago today, we're recording this on Sunday, the week after the Phoenix race, and man, it's like, it's crazy how it's just in the books. There's such an adrenaline rush. But we, you know, it's a good time to reflect and look back on things. So, are you ready to go through our worst race and our five best races?
I am, and actually going through the list of races this year, I realized there was a lot of good races this year. I thought overall it was a very competitive season with a lot more better races. That sounds terrible. There was a lot of races that were really good, I thought, than a lot of not more clunkers. So I thought overall it was a pretty good season, and it just kind of dawned on me going through the list, putting together my list.
Yeah, I don't have the stat in front of me, but there's the guy on Twitter. I think his name is Ron H 256 or 246 or something like that. I can't get the numbers right, but he always makes charts of my "Was it a good race?" poll thing, and he had compared this season to previous seasons, and I think this one was the highest in recent years this season overall. You know, some categories were down, some categories were up, but you know, depending on the type of track, but overall seemed like this was generally a well-received season. As you said, no real clunkers, but let's talk about what we thought was our biggest clunker. And do you want to go first for the pick for your worst race? And we'll get into the best. We'll end it on a positive note, but we'll start out with our single worst race of the year.
Yeah, and I think to me, this was kind of I chose this race because of a sliding scale. And I chose the first Martinsville race. Now, if I think of a clunker of a race, honestly, was that good or bad?
I'm shocked. The first Martinsville race. Okay,
well,
no, I'm
well, here's
listening.
Here's why. And there was so much hype for that race. Remember, it was a Wednesday night race. We all were like, hey, wow, short track racing, midweek short track race. This is going to be great. We were all excited. This is kind of what we've asked for a long time. This is going to be chaotic and nuts, and people at home are going to be watching this. And it just it probably was overhyped, and it wasn't that competitive of a race. Martin Truex Jr. and Joey Logano absolutely dominated. They led a combined 366 laps. Truex won by 4.7 seconds. It just didn't really have any drama. It didn't have any of those wow moments. It just didn't have what we were kind of hoping that the first short track race on a weeknight was going to deliver. And that is why I picked this race over Kentucky, because it's kind of a sliding scale for me. It's like, we know Kentucky is, let's be honest, isn't going to deliver great racing. It had a great finish. Cole Custer winning, you know, on that restart was amazing, but that race wasn't very good. And just, but it's Kentucky. We know what we're going to expect. And for me, I always expect great racing at Martinsville, or at least something memorable is going to happen, and that just didn't happen this year. So with you factor and everything associated with it and surrounding that race, that to me is why it was the dud of the year.
Okay, that makes sense. And, you know, Martin Truex Jr., looking at the stats here, he did lead the last 131 laps of that race. The last 97 laps of that race went green. There was no... You know, not too many cautions, no real big accidents. They threw one caution for Timmy Hill being stalled on the track, for instance. So, yeah, it wasn't the typical Martinsville, certainly. And it wasn't as good as the Martinsville we saw later in the year. And like you said, there was a lot of hype for that. So I could see why you'd say that. But I think there was plenty worse races that were not hyped and also were let down. So for me... The lowest race this year, and it wasn't a good race poll, was Atlanta. 36.8% of people said it was a good race. And to me, that I agreed with that. I looked at that race, and I was like, is that really the worst race? I went back, looked at what I wrote from the top five, things like that that week. It really was a bad race. First of all, another Atlanta race with no multi-car crashes. There hadn't been a multi-car crash at Atlanta now since 2016. That's 1,500 miles of Atlanta racing without any accidents other than spins. That's not good, especially when those races are long to begin with. The only two cautions in that race, in terms of like real cautions, not competition cautions or whatever, the front row cars spun off turn four separately. Stage three, the last 108 laps of that race went entirely green, and Kevin Harvick led every lap in that final stage except during the green flag pit cycle. So 105 of the last 108 laps. And it really, what was crazy about that race is everybody's screaming for Atlanta, you know, don't repave it, don't repave it. And it turns out, you know, for Atlanta, this package might be better if they did repave it, because this package, the current package, works better when they can hold it wide open and stay together. When they get strung out and they also don't have the horsepower to pass each other, that's like the worst combination. Kyle Busch said, I think, after that race that he didn't have one lap the entire time that was wide open. And for this package, that's what makes it bad. So it was a terrible race, honestly. I didn't think it was good at all. And I agreed with those who said that it was the worst race. And was it a good race poll?
No, you make great points, and I agree with you. It was for me, it was a unforgettable Atlanta race, but it's in a string of unforgettable Atlanta races that you typically see Kevin Harvick dominate. So, yeah, no, I agree with everything you said there.
All right. Well, let's get into our five best races of the season now. And again, Jordan and I have not consulted on what we thought were the five or the order, of course, of those five. So I'll just go ahead and go first here. My fifth best race of the 2020 season was the second Darlington race. And that's not
that's mine too.
Really? That's your fifth best?
Yeah, fifth
Wednesday night one?
Yeah, Wednesday night. Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, that whole everything. It was great.
Wow, okay, yeah. So that was, remember, there was three Darlington races this year, and NASCAR resumed its, after the hiatus, it went back-to-back Darlington races. So it did that Sunday, the first race back. Everybody will remember that for a long time. And then it went into that Wednesday. Now, this race was rain delayed by a couple hours, and it also turned out to be rain shortened. But as you mentioned, this was the Denny Hamlin win, and most notable for the Kyle Busch Chase Elliott incident, where Kyle Busch is looking in his mirror trying to cut up in line, and he ends up wrecking Chase Elliott, who does his middle finger salute. That was a pretty memorable moment there, Jordan.
It was, and it showed really kind of for the first time ever that I remember Chase Elliott really showing some personality and some gumption, and I like that. That was good. It was also the first midweek race, which is also something we had talked about for a long time. You know, NASCAR should race on a Wednesday night, and they finally did. The racing was terrific, too. I mean, it wasn't, you know, Clint Bowyer led the most laps at 71, but he kind of faded at the end, and there were so many different guys in the mix, and there was a lot of tire wear, if you remember, so that really impacted things, and it was just a classic Darlington old-school race, and I thought it was terrific, and it was one of those races you look at and you go, that is what a NASCAR race should be at a Darlington race-type racetrack, and it was great.
I agree with you, and they also, you know, at that time, you had a lot of parity. Seven different mm-hmm. drivers led at least 10 laps in that race, and it was only a 8-lap race. Excuse me. I can't get my words straight here. But and at the same time, so you had different guys up front, Clint Bowyer, people like that. And you also had the most cautions at Darlington since 2015 with 11 cautions. And that was in almost half the distance of the other Darlington races. Because remember, it being rain shortened, it was only, I think, 284 miles. Mm-hmm. So that really, I mean, there was a lot of action, a lot of different leaders in a short amount of time. You had the race ultimately ending. They could never get it back going again once the rain came after the Kyle Busch Chase Elliott thing. But that was a heck of a way to end things. The drama, Denny Hamlin's stupid smiley face mask, all that stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and don't forget too. Remember, Alan Gustafson and Kyle Busch had the and Gustafson kind of stared down Kyle Busch on pit road, and then they had the talking on afterwards.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So there was a lot of like, oh man, you know, that being the first midweek race too, was just like, I thought, oh, all these are going to deliver like this. You know, unfortunately it didn't turn out that way, but that was a definitely exciting one. So let's go on to number four. Jordan, you want to go first for your number four?
Sure. I had the first Talladega race in the spring, and I think part of this is obviously what happened on the racetrack. It was a tremendous race. Ryan Blaney narrowly beat Ricky Stenhouse Jr. across the finish line. Eric Almirola went backwards across the finish line to finish third. It was a typical wild and crazy Talladega race, and the fact that there's a lot of different guys in the mix, and you know, Bubba Wallace was almost pulled an upset win, and then obviously everything that happened before the race and the show of unity, and you know, the drivers and the industry really pushing the number 43 car to the front of the grid and standing up for what they at the time everyone believed was a racist act directed towards Bubba Wallace. To me, that is on the track, off the track, that was something that you're never going to forget. And when you look at what happened on the racetrack in terms of competitiveness and everything, it was a tremendous Talladega race. So that clocks in number four on my list.
Well, I'll chime in on where I have this race as well. I have this as my number two race. Okay. And I think you hit on a lot of the points here. But first of all, you know, to set the scene, we all have to remember that this was the first super speedway race since Ryan Newman's accident. And there was a lot of nervousness because they had slightly adjusted the rules since that Daytona 500 race. And there was supposed to be practice that weekend. Remember that? They were actually going to practice.
That's right. Yeah,
and then they said, you know what? Nah, we'll just forget it. We'll just go right into this new package, essentially, or a tweak to the package without any practice. And everybody's like, oh, how's this going to work out? So you had that going. And then, like you said, you had the highly emotional weekend. You know, NASCAR was coming off the flag ban. They had the banner fly over. You know, I don't know if it was the one that
protest
said defund
in front of the track.
What's that? The protest.
Yeah, the protest in front of the track. Yeah,
the protest in front of the track. People driving by with Confederate flags. And then, of course, the noose, which obviously turned out to be a misunderstanding and an embarrassment in the way that it happened for NASCAR. But at the same time, the message there was so emotional because nobody realized at the time that it was a misunderstanding. And so you had, like you said, all of the drivers pushing Bubba Wallace to the front of the field, that image, that community rallying together, the eyes of the world were on NASCAR. And then they put together an amazing race, 57 lead changes, which was at the time that ended up getting passed in the fall, but the most since the 2011 Talladega race where you had the two car tandems. There was no big one at that Talladega race, but it was teased the entire time. I mean, the drivers not one time in that Talladega race where the cars got single filed out up against the wall. Not one time. So that was amazing. I mean, they were just racing the whole time, blocking, getting runs, but not knocking each other out of the way. That was great. it looked like Jimmy Johnson is going to have a chance to win that race. He gets a run. He goes up to second place late in the race. Harvick turns him. Harvick was sort of in the, tried to go to the middle, and he turns Jimmy Johnson, as it looked right. like that could have been Jimmy Johnson's final chance at a win. Ultimately, it goes to overtime, and it's a crazy last lap where Blaney comes up through the field, gets a run, barely beats Stenhouse the line, as you said, knocks Jones into the wall. Almirola, you mentioned, also finishes third place going backwards. Ends up being Blaney's only victory of the season. But just that race, everything that went into it, it was just really incredible. That's why I put it number two. So I guess we're kind of jumping around here. So I'll just go to my number four now. I assume you might have this elsewhere on your list, and you can let us know. Number four for me was the Daytona regular season finale. Is that on your list as well?
Oh, it is. And that's number two on my list.
Okay, so we have number four, number two, just flip-flopped. I see. So Daytona... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what made it stand out to you? Why is that on your list?
So for me, you know, I was resistant to having that move off July 4th weekend in the first place. But once you saw it as the regular season finale there, that really was a great place to put it. I mean, that race was super dramatic. As we've already talked about, the Super Speedway rules package right now is working phenomenally on these plate tracks, or non-plate tracks now. But it's just, this is like, with this car and this package, we'll have to enjoy the four races we'll get next year, because it's just the sweet spot. I can't remember a better overall Super Speedway package. Anyway, you had so much drama in this race. Jimmy Johnson trying to make the playoffs, to Benedetto. And then you had all these different guys up there late in the race throughout different points. Oh, could they win their way in? Ultimately, William Byron ends up winning his way in with his first career victory. 35 lead changes in this race, Jordan. That was that's more than seven of the last nine Daytona 500s, but this was only a 400-mile race. And, I mean, you had, with two laps to go, you had a big one. Bubba and Kenseth had been up there looking like they could potentially steal a win there and make the playoffs. Overtime, you had Byron versus Christopher Bell, and then ultimately Byron holds off Truex to win. So I thought it was a pretty good race, but obviously you thought it was even better than I did.
I thought it was phenomenal. I remember watching, being up in the press box and watching stage two unfold and the drama associated with it, and just thinking at any second, it just felt like you were just waiting for something to erupt, the big one to erupt, and the hard racing that was going on. And there was no cautions. I mean, in that stage, there was no cautions. And you had that big group of Chevy cars tracking down the Ford and Toyota pack that were leading, and them just chipping away at this lead. And being able to watch that in person was incredible. And then when they caught the pack, and then Johnson is leading it, and he's slicing through them, it was phenomenal. And you mentioned the drama with the playoffs. Jimmy Johnson, William Byron, Matt D, all vying, you know, for, there's two playoff spots, and there's two playoff spots for three drivers competing for two playoff spots. And then, like you said, there was guys like Bubba Wallace in the mix, and he almost pulled off an upset win. Tyler Reddick was in the mix, and then he ended up causing a wreck. And just the drama associated with that, William Byron getting his first win and punching his ticket to the playoffs, and that ended up being Chad Knaus' final win as a crew chief. And Chad Knaus finally getting that win with a driver other than Jimmy Johnson, which kind of, you know, meant a lot to him. So just everything with that race. Like you, I'm a traditionalist. I always liked that race as the, you know, the 4th of July. That's just how it's been for, you know, from NASCAR, is Daytona 4th of July. But moving it to the regular season finale was inspired. It's everything you want in a regular season finale. You've got guys fighting for the playoff lives. You've got guys trying to scratch and claw and to pull off an upset win. And it's just, that is exactly what you want. And I think the viewers at home and race fans in attendance, it saw a tremendous, tremendous race.
Yeah, I agree with you, and a great point about the Knaus thing as well. I mean, if that doesn't happen, you know, Knaus never ends his career with a win with a driver other than Jimmy Johnson. And ultimately, Jimmy Johnson never got a win with a, well, I guess he did actually with Darian Grubb, right? When Knaus was suspended for Daytona. I take that back. But anyway, so far we know that Jordan and I have three of the same races. There's two left. We've found out that the Darlington number two race. It was both of our fifth best races. Now, looking at the Was It a Good Race poll, that was the fans' third best race of the year. So that got 93.8% for the third best race of the year. May have been boosted a little bit by the euphoria of coming back at the time. The Daytona regular season finale that I had number four and Jordan had number two, that was actually the fourth best race of the year with a 90% voted on by the Twitter followers. And then the other race we mentioned, the first Talladega race that Jordan had number four and I had number two, that is the second best race of the year as voted on by the readers. So let's see what Jordan's third best race of the season is. Jordan, what do you say?
The first Bristol race in late May, which was a classic short track race. Everything you want to see at Bristol. A lot of passing, a lot of bumping and banging, hurt feelings. Joey Logano and Chase Elliott had a run in. They had a little chit-chat on pit road afterwards. Denny Hamlin was in the mix at the end, and he got involved. He got in the wall, and then Brad Keselowski, you know, kind of steals that win, so to speak. And it was just a classic short track Bristol race. I walked away from that going, I think we all did, going, we need more of this. This is great. This is something we want to see every week. So to me, that was number three on my list, and I think it's deserved.
Wow. Well, I have this one, Jordan, number one on my list, the Bristol Spring Race.
Whoa, you have that number one?
Number one, the best race of the season.
I don't know how, I mean, we're going to jump ahead here, but I don't know.
No, don't tell me what yours is. Don't tell me what yours is yet. I don't want to hear.
I have questions. Why do you have this number one?
Okay, so first of all, this was one of those races where I remember thinking, okay, like late in the race, I'm thinking, regardless of the finish, this has been a great race all day, no matter what happens, right? Like if there's a great finish in this race, it'll cap it off, but this is really good. Because in this race, this is one of those races where they perfected the PJ1 on the lower groove. And then the high line had momentum, but the lower groove, you could get in there enough. And so it created a lot of side-by-side racing for the lead where, you know, maybe they couldn't necessarily pass, but it was really competitive, and it was also the first real short track race since they had gone back to this package. And it was just wow, this is just, remember how good the short track rules package was with the 750 and all that stuff in the lower spoiler. It was really great. So like you said, Denny Hamlin, you know, he's leading with 11 to go. He's coming up on lap traffic. Suddenly gets too high. He makes a mistake. There was several mistakes throughout this race. Where the drivers...
Ryan Blaney spun out on his own and crashed, running second.
Yep, and Jimmy Johnson said afterwards, hey, you know, maybe we've made it look too easy because we're on edge the entire time, and that makes it for good racing. So he gets too high. Logano tries to pass him, gets loose himself, gets into the wall. Suddenly, Elliott's the leader and in control. Caution comes out for Hamlin, right? So then Logano takes the lead on the restart. Elliott, gets mad right away or whatever, bumps Logano, tries to do a bump and run up high, which doesn't really make sense. Then the very next corner, he just completely missed it and took both of them out. Keselowski comes up and steals it instead, as you mentioned. Then you have that confrontation after the race where Logano's out of his car. It's a silent, you know, there's no fans there. The place would have been going completely nuts. You know, so Logano's staring at Elliott. Elliott won't even look at him. Ultimately you had 17 cautions as well, which is the most for a Bristol race since 2006. Crazy. So it was a lot going on in that race. A lot of just being on the edge, really having to drive it, highly entertaining. Ultimately as well, it gets 94.9% on the Was It a Good Race poll, number one race of all time in the poll. Going back to beginning of the 2016 season. And I agree with that. I mean, to me, it was just, I was totally thrilled by it. And I remember just man, this is NASCAR racing right here. But it sounds like you are putting the second Martinsville number one.
I don't know how you don't have that number one, but we can talk about it. But
we're skipping number three. So we'll, why don't we debate? Why don't you tell us? Wait, you said that was your number three, right?
That was my number three. Okay. So let's go to number two. So, and number two on my list was the Daytona regular season finale, which we discussed. So where are you at now on your list?
So my number three is the second Martinsville race. So we flip flopped, I guess, okay. Number one and number three, number four, and number two. So give me your argument for why Martinsville should be my Martinsville second race should be the best race of the year.
That was everything you want in a semifinal round finale to set up the championship. You had great racing, hard racing. You had drama. You had wild twists and turns with Kevin Harvick struggling, then falling two laps down because he had a cut tire, and then trying to claw back and get back on the lead lap, and finally does late, and then him trying to move up and get enough points to move on and advance. And we all thought Harvick was a lock to advance, and all of a sudden he's not a lock and he's out of the playoffs. And then obviously he and, you know, Kyle Busch racing hard in the last lap, and Harvick turning Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin teetering, and, you know, he goes in there, looks like he's in good shape, has a strong run, then he has an issue on pit road, and then he looks like he's not going to make it. So we've got Denny Hamlin and Kevin Harvick, the top two seeds who we all thought were going to make it to the championship four. They may not make it. It didn't look like they were going to make either one of them was going to make it. Brad Keselowski's rally from, you know, a speeding penalty to get into the championship four. And then really, Chase Elliott, which is in a breakthrough moment, coming through his first really clutch performance, has to win to get in, does that, overcomes the mistake on pit road where the Jackman jumped over the wall prematurely, and then the smartness of the Jackman to get back, reestablish himself. Everything with that race is what you wanted to see. We had such high expectations when Martinsville was put as the last race, as the cutoff race for the championship, and not only did it meet those expectations, it far exceeded them. I don't know if you're a NASCAR fan and you watched Martinsville, how you couldn't be happy and think, this is everything I want in my NASCAR.
Well, Jordan, listen, you're absolutely right in that modern-day NASCAR has to be viewed through the prism of a playoff situation. So you can't just look at a race now, and if it's a playoff race, and not apply the playoff drama to it, because that is part of the race. So absolutely, when you have all that drama, that's why I say it's the third best race of the year. I mean, all the Harvick, Hamlin, Keselowski cutoff stuff, that is thrilling. And you know, obviously I know that Eric Jones part of it left a bad taste in some mouths of some fans. But to me, you're not going to go past your playoff teammate who's trying to make the final four. Harvick's own teammates, by the way, Almirola and Bowyer, could have fallen back maybe in the final laps without anybody really, you know, noticing if it wasn't too blatant. And he could have gotten a point there if that was a situation where you wanted to bring teammates into it. I think people were mad because it was Toyota and Hamlin and Harvick knocked out. And, of course, Harvick with 9 wins, we thought he deserved to make it, but he didn't. He ultimately didn't. So I understand that part of it. But, I mean, it was a good race overall in that there was 20 different lead changes, which is the most at Martinsville since the Jeff Gordon victory in 2015. So that it was a good race. But you also had somebody win by 6.5 seconds on a short track. And the last 51 laps of the race went green. So, again, I do agree that you have to apply the playoff situation to judging the race. But let's say you do take away the playoff drama in the race itself. Again, a guy winning by 6.5 seconds in the final 51 laps going green, is that a good Martinsville race? I would say if this race was the spring race, where you talked about it was the worst race, I mean, I think it was better for sure, but I don't know if it's just quite the number one race of the year. To me, Bristol, where you had a good race throughout, plus the incredible drama at the finish, like for the win, that supersedes it. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think we're that far off, but I just think we see it slightly differently.
I agree. I mean, they were both tremendous races, and I think you can argue any of my top three on my list. Honestly, I could have flip-flopped them in any order and been very happy. I just, as I said at the open of the episode, I thought the racing was really tremendous this year, and there was quite a few races that I honestly feel like I probably should have been in my top five that weren't. So I can see all of this. I have no complaints with any order that you put it in. But to me, just everything that went into Martinsville and everything associated with it and what it meant, I just can't move past that.
So Martinsville, in terms of the fan reaction, ultimately, that only got voted the sixth best race. And I think that was a lot of bitterness from the Harvick development, all that stuff. Because we both on this podcast thought it was going to be in the 90s easily.
and it wasn't. It got 88.8%. So, in fact, the first Phoenix race was voted ahead of this Martinsville race, which didn't make either of our top five lists.
And this is why the poll is silly. And this is why I don't care about this poll.
Even though four of your top five races are the top four races in the poll, you don't care about the poll.
I don't care about the poll because people are like, they get hung up on things. And you're telling me that the first Phoenix race is going to rate higher than the Martinsville?
Well, remember, that was a really good race, and that was the first race back. That was a good race, and it was the first race back with the 750 package, and people, I think, were trying to show their support for, like, say, hey, yes, this is really good. We like this, you know? And especially, remember, they were comparing it as well to the fall Phoenix race the year before, which sucked, so... All right.
Give me two memorable things that happened in that Phoenix race.
I can't remember. It was a lifetime ago.
Exactly. That's the point. It's the whole point.
Thank you. I didn't put it on my top five. But anyway, listen, one thing that wasn't in our top five, either of our top five, and it also wasn't even polled for the fans, was the Daytona 500. I really wrestled with including the Daytona 500 on the poll, on my top five. Ultimately, I decided against it. I'd love to hear your reasons for why you didn't include it, and then I'll share mine.
Probably the same reason you didn't, and I have it in my notes because, like I said, it was a great race. I mean, it had everything you want in a race, and unpredictability, and you know, Daytona craziness and everything, and the finish. Obviously, I think I can say this now because we know Ryan Newman is okay, but it was memorable, unforgettable. But to me, it still doesn't feel right in retrospect of just kind of celebrating it. I have a hard time with that because I still, when I think about that race, I'll always remember being on pit road and walking down pit road, and it was just really quiet, and seeing the ambulance pull away and going the opposite direction on the racetrack to take Ryan to the hospital. And I just can't get over that. So I felt really uneasy celebrating it, though. Again, great racing, and then the fact that Ryan Newman was out of the hospital 2 days later and is back now 100% healthy is, you know, makes it a little bit easier. I just still just not 100% comfortable with that.
Yeah, it's for me, it's the same. I mean, had the injury not occurred at the end of that race, I think it's one of the all-time, you know, classic Daytona 500s, and certainly would be in the top five of my list. Maybe not in the top three, but it would be four or five for sure. Because it was a good race. But like you said, I mean, I remember, so our editor, Allison, had said, you know, go ahead and go to the hospital to see, you know, we're going to get an update there. And, or we thought we were going to. So I walk from the media center, I'm walking out of the racetrack, and on my way out, I'm passing all these, you know, crew members with grim faces. Nobody's saying anything. I've never covered a death in racing before, and I'm like, this is it, this is really bad. And his mangled wreck car came back past me on the rollback of the tow truck, and I mean, it just made me sick to my stomach seeing it. I was just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I think somebody died in that car. And you get to the hospital, and you know, the whole way walking whatever 2 miles it was to the hospital, I was just like, he's dead. I mean, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And of course we found out shortly thereafter he was alive, but then we thought, you know, he's in serious condition, all the stuff, in a coma or whatever. And ultimately he comes out of it, and I think everybody sort of is able to move on with the season and go, oh my gosh, he's back at Phoenix, how great. But, you know, and we forget about this because of all the pandemic stuff. That wreck, I mean, that could have been way worse. We found out later his helmet was cracked. Corey LaJoie's car had made some sort of intrusion into the cockpit, so that it made contact with his helmet, supposedly. We still haven't really gotten the full investigation details, but you know, that that could have been easily a lot worse, and really put a shadow over this entire season, whether it's he can never race again or whether he was killed, whatever. NASCAR, everybody, Ryan Newman got extremely lucky. And so for me, I can't really say, oh yeah, that was an awesome race. Just even though we know now he's fine, I can't really be like, badass, you know what I mean? So I think we're on the same page as to why. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So we end up having the five best races, or the five same races, different worst race. We have the same reasons for leaving Daytona 500 off. We have a different top five than the fans. And just to recap, let's just recap one more time before we sign off here. And then we have one more thing to do as well. So in the Was It a Good Race poll, the top five races were Bristol 1, Talladega 1, Darlington 2, Daytona 2, and Phoenix 1. And their worst race was Atlanta 1. Mine's pretty similar. Mine was Bristol 1 was the best race, Talladega 1, Martinsville 2, Daytona 2, and Darlington 2. And yours was Martinsville 2. Then you had Daytona 2, Talladega, Bristol 1, mm-hmm. Talladega 1, and Darlington 2. And then you had Martinsville 1 as your worst. So yeah, I don't know if
that was...
Which
now I think about it, Martinsville had the best and worst races in my estimation, which is funny to think about.
Wow. Yeah, that is wild. And then on my end, the Atlanta race, for my worst pick... Now they have two races next year, and then my number one race of the year, Bristol, isn't even happening next year because that's going to be the dirt race. So anyway, so Jordan, we're not quite done with the Was It a Good Race poll yet. I'm not going to rub in my amazing victory that I won 6-4, only missed it by a couple percent. I'm not going to rub that in at all. I'm not even going to rub in that Steve O'Donnell almost beat both of us. He was only off by about 4%. I have a feeling that you guessed 80, I guessed 70, end up being 68. I think Steve O'Donnell didn't want to guess lower than us. You know what I mean? He wasn't going to come on and be like, nah, you guys are wrong. It's worse than that. So he ends up guessing 72. But we offered him 6 points. He could have easily won this. That would have been something. But, we're going to do one last guess here, Jordan, because on Monday, and depending on when people listen to this, I'm going to ask, was it a good season? So this is going to be the fourth season in a row that I've asked, was this a good NASCAR season? Let me give you the numbers because I know you probably don't know what they were previously. So 2019, 56% yes. 2018, 69% yes. 2017, 76% yes for was it a good season. So what do you think people are going to say about 2020, whether it was a good season?
I'm going to say 70%. I don't really have a rhyme or reason. I thought the racing was really competitive. I thought it was unpredictable in some senses. I know Kevin Harvick and Denny Hamlin dominated, but come the playoffs, we saw a lot of different storylines emerge. We had a first-time champion in Chase Elliott, who is obviously very popular. So give me 70%, and I factor in everything that happened this year with COVID and the shutdown and NASCAR having to scramble. I think people respect the fact that NASCAR had to move heaven and earth to kind of get a season in, and they got it in on time. So yeah, I'm going to go with that.
I think 70% is very reasonable. I do think this was the best overall season, despite everybody's really being upset about the rules package. I mean, ultimately, the second worst race of the season on the Was It a Good Race poll was that second Kansas race where Logano is blocking for the last whatever 30 laps and Harvick can't pass him despite having a faster car. Ultimately, that kept Harvick out of the championship. But so people were really, by the end of the season, really, really upset, I think, with the rules package on the intermediate tracks. They had sort of had it, and they'd sort of come to the realization that, look, we don't like this for whatever reason. It finally hit a lot of people. So I think that when you look at the season overall, that feeling, I think that will still be relatively recent, and people will sort of vote on that despite the popular winner and despite really having some pretty good races overall throughout the season. And as we said earlier, overall having a higher average than the recent races. So I think 70 is very reasonable. I might just go like a over under situation there. I don't think it's going to get to 77% and be the best season voted on there in the recent years, but I think it could be in the 70s. So I'll go ahead and do 71%. You can do 70%. Well, I was thinking about doing 70.1%. But no, I mean, I think we could do over under. I'll take the under if you want, if you're really, if you're.
No, it's fine. No, you just do whatever you want to do. I don't care.
You say you don't care, but as Steve O'Donnell said on the podcast last week, look at him. He cares. I think that's right. So, I'm sorry that this turned out this way for you, Jordan, but you'll have to.
It's okay. I still love you.
Okay. Well, listen, everybody, there's nothing I enjoy more than arguing with Jordan Bianchi. I wish that we had been had the chance to argue more on this, but we end up having the five same races, so at least we have them in a different order. And we'll be back with you next week for another topic. Don't know what yet, but we'll see what happens. See if there's any news that goes on in this off season. We'll talk about that.
Next gen test this week.
Oh, there you go. You can tell us your impressions of that. We'll have plenty to talk about. There's many things to talk about from this season that we can go back and digest more than just the best races. So, everybody, we appreciate you. We appreciate you listening. Thanks for all the feedback we get. We love our downers or whatever you're called, teardown listeners. So we're not leaving again. We'll be chatting with you all off season long. So please keep us company as well. And until then, we will talk to you next time on The Teardown.